On this episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast, we reflect on journalism and family. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Glad to have you along. Jim Morrill is an ink-stained wretch. He started at the Charlotte Observer in 1981 and will retire next month after 39 years in journalism. Jim has brought a gentle tenacity to political reporting, and he has served the people of this state well. I've learned from his writing and his company in the years since starting on this beat. Jim is widely respected, and his pending departure undeniably leaves a void in the annals of North Carolina news. Today, a jaunt down memory lane. Hope you enjoy. What are you doing? What do you think you're doing? Just leaving us high and dry here.
You know, I think that there comes a time when you have to know when it's time to go. Not everybody appears to know that when it's time to go, but, you know, it's been a good ride, and I was trying to get through one more election, and, you know, we thought we'd have the convention here in Charlotte, which we sort of kind of did, but, you know, it just seems like a good time to kind of check out.
I want to ask you a number of questions about journalism and the state of journalism here in a few moments, but you've been through the decline of newspaper, you've been through this changing landscape in journalism, which we'll get to again in a moment. But my question is, have you been close to retiring before?
No, not really. You know, I thought maybe at some point last year I would do it. And then looking ahead to this year's election and the convention that we thought we would have, you know, it seemed like a good time to stay.
This election, from my perspective, unprecedented, a unique cycle. However, you are operating with a lot more experience and history than me. You've covered dozens of elections. I believe, as we were chatting offline before we hit record, you mentioned you've covered 11 national conventions, Republican or Democratic. And I'm wondering what struck you most routine and conversely most outlandish about this 2020 election cycle.
Wow. It was just an election cycle unlike any others, you know. I mean, the pandemic really threw a few wrenches into everything. You know, we couldn't go out and cover things like we used to. You know, I'm in the age category where it's probably not particularly safe to go out and about with a lot of people. So we didn't. And candidates didn't either. That was obvious. And, you know, so it was just a completely different election cycle all around, you know. And for months and months, we here in Charlotte were getting ready for the convention, you know, that we thought we would have. We'd been through this once before. We kind of knew the ropes. We knew what was involved. And, you know, it was almost a two-year beat when we had the convention in 2012 for the Democrats. So we expected to be involved in that a lot and do a lot. But, you know, the way it turned out, it kind of fizzled out too. So it was just another 2020 indication of how this election was different.
So your political reporting experience covers, if we count this as a new decade, which it is, it covers five decades. You covered 1984 elections. And at that time, again, as you mentioned before I hit record here, North Carolina was flyover country. And today it is one of the key battlegrounds, swing states, a purple landscape, call it whatever you want. And I think we know some of the obvious ways in which the state has changed. There's more attention, there's more money. But from your experience, what are some of the other threads, some of the other changes that you've seen as North Carolina has gone from flyover to battleground?
Well, you know, it's a lot, you're right, it's a lot more purple, a lot more blue in different places, and red, still red in different places. You know, I remember when Mecklenburg County went for Republicans, and, you know, I came here to start covering the city council back in the early 80s and the local government. You know, we had Republican mayors, and the Republicans, you know, often had majorities on the city council. Charlotte had a Republican mayor for, you know, over two decades in a row. And so that's obviously changed. I remember being surprised in 2004 when I saw that John Kerry had carried Mecklenburg County. And I don't know how it was in Wake County and some of the other urban areas, but I think it was probably the same. And you saw, a drift from slightly Democratic to what it is now, which is really Democratic in urban areas, and the rural areas are really, really red. So, the rural urban divide, the polarization, that's certainly gotten worse. The people who talk to you and the people who don't. There are candidates now who didn't really return a phone call this year, or a text message, Republican candidates. And it didn't used to be that way.
I'm going to throw you on the spot here. We obviously can cut this if you don't want to touch it, but I'm going to ask you if Richard Hudson is one of those. Because for me, I'll pull the curtain back a little bit. Republican Congressman Richard Hudson was somebody I tried to get up with during the election season, and I just couldn't make inroads with him or his camp. It was Hudson one of those people, or would you share anybody else?
Yeah, no. Richard Hudson was one of those people, and Dan Bishop, and in the legislative races, Bill Brawley, who I'd always gotten along with. I used to hang out in his office up in Raleigh and schmooze when he was finance chairman. But in the last couple of years, that's changed. Richard Hudson used to be a campaign manager, I think, for Pat McCrory, and worked for Robin Hayes in the 8th District for years and years, and we always got along fine. And I talked to his press secretary just once, I think, all year, even though we wrote more about the race. But it was a really strange campaign to cover.
So I guess I refer to them as the giants of North Carolina politics, the Jesse Helms and Jim Hunts and Pat McCrory to a lesser extent, the Mark Basnights and the Phil Burgers. You've been around for a long time. You have, I would imagine, done thousands and thousands of interviews. As you reflect back on the cast of characters, which ones stand out and why?
Jesse Helms was a person all to himself. He was he could talk about you at I remember once I asked him some questions at a press conference. We were up in Boone during a campaign, and we were part of this coalition of North Carolina newspapers, and we all had to ask each candidate the same question, so I had to read my question. And so I did at this press conference. It was an event, the venue where he was speaking later, and he answered it. And then he got up in front of 1,000 people later, and he said, "The Charlotte Observer reporter couldn't even look me in the eye and ask me this question." So, and then he kind of proceeded to dump on the media. Harvey Gantt was memorable for me because I covered Gantt when he was elected mayor for the first time in Charlotte, and then reelected, and then lost an election where that he took for granted a couple of years after that. But for to have an African American running against Jesse Helms, who was foremost champion of the right at that time, it was historic, and it was a great campaign to cover.
What else was memorable for you about Gantt and your experiences, interactions with him?
Harvey Gantt had a just a history that was part of the civil rights movement. He was the first student to integrate Clemson University, the first black student to integrate Clemson. He had told me about that and told me about what it was like, to be a student at Clemson, to be the first black student at Clemson, really, the first black male, and the first black female was the woman that he later married. So there was a poignant personal history to Harvey Gantt, and a part of American history, really. Plus, he was just an interesting guy. He was an architect. He was a professional architect who had a master's in city planning from MIT. So it's just been interesting to kind of watch people with a sense of history of who they are and where they came from.
So as I think back on your career and I think about what were potential, like, oh my goodness, moments in North Carolina political history, I think about Patrick Cannon, the former Charlotte mayor who was picked up by the FBI for accepting a bribe. I think about this whole Lindbergh thing and Congressman Robin Hayes, who I imagine you knew decently well through your professional capacity, falling under federal indictment. What were the oh my goodness moments? Moments that just totally took you by surprise.
You know, I think the first one really was when I was in Raleigh covering the legislature in the 80s. And I don't know if you remember Liston Ramsey or remember the name. He was the first House Speaker. He was a Democrat from Madison County. And he served for, I think, four terms as Speaker. This is at a time when nobody served as Speaker for more than a couple terms, you know. So he was sort of breaking new ground. And he was sort of a bear of a man. From Madison County, and he didn't suffer fools or reporters that much, you know. He was intimidating a little bit, and I remember being in the chamber when they voted against him, when they unseated him, and it was a Democratic coup against one of their own, and Joe Mavretta, who you may have run across, became the speaker. And it was really dramatic because it was sort of like the unseating of an icon. So that was a real dramatic moment, and I think Roy Cooper was one of the people who were in on the coup with Mavretta, and you know, they partnered with some Republicans and got Mavretta elected. So I think that was sort of one of them. And you know, with Patrick Cannon and the mayor of Charlotte, I mean, Patrick was an up and comer, probably more so in his eyes than even in reality. But you know, I covered him when he was first elected to the city council as a young guy, and older Democrats would tell me how green he was and how, you know, naive he was. But you know, we had never had a mayor caught up in a sting operation before, paying off money to undercover FBI agents. So that was something.
I want to prod you with a few journalism questions. Our fragile fourth estate is fractured, fragmented at best. There's plenty of distrust right now. I'm wondering how you view or assess perhaps the state of journalism today relative to when you entered this business, this industry.
You know, I think you're right. I think it's threatened. You know, I think there are still some anchors, you know, with newspapers in Raleigh and in Charlotte, and you know, I always tell people that when I started covering the legislature, Jeff, back when we were in a small press room, had nothing but cinder block walls and you know, crowded desk and little cubicle, not even a cubicle.
That hasn't changed, Jim.
I have not seen your new one yet, but you know, we had reporters from all over. We had reporters from Asheville, Gastonia, Winston, Greensboro, Wilmington, and places in between. And now you don't see any of those reporters in the press room, unless I'm wrong. But you don't even see somebody from Charlotte there anymore on a permanent basis, you know. The NNO covers for us, and they do a good job. But there's a lot of people, a lot of cities that no longer have eyes and ears in the legislature. And as you know, there can be a lot of mischief done by legislators when nobody's watching, so. You know, on the other hand, you know, there are, I guess you'd call them startup media operations, you know, the collaboratives, nonprofits. You know, one of the best things I've seen this year is in Asheville. It's called the AVL Watchdog, Asheville Watchdog, which is run by some former Pulitzer Prize winners from the Miami Herald. You know, and they did great stuff on the congressional race out there and some other stuff. So the future may be, you know, there are these startup type operations and nonprofits that may fill a void.
One quick follow-up. Tell me what you remember about the smoke. The smoke in the press room, the
Oh,
smoking on the floor of the House and the Senate.
was terrible. I mean, the press room was a, you know, one smoke-filled room. You know, there were smoke-filled rooms all over the legislature, and people could smoke and in the hallways, and I think on the floor too, if I recall. And ashtrays on the desk and everything. You know, not the most healthy environment.
As the news of your retirement was announced last week, I've seen a lot of activity and tributes and people celebrating, saying goodbye on Twitter. One of the common themes to me is just your approach to journalism, your fairness, your continued aim to think about the reader. And I'm wondering if that has been challenging or when that has been challenging as the landscape in journalism has shifted, as there's been a little bit more of, I don't know, an ire toward political reporters. Has it just been steady Eddie for you, or has it been hard to kind of maintain a kindness and a fairness as you do your job?
You know, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate that. But, you know, it's gotten a little harder in the last couple of years. You know, when you have somebody in the White House calling you fake news all the time and calling you the enemies of the people, that filters down. You know, I don't cover the president. But I think there are a lot of people in North Carolina that do take that stuff real seriously. And I think it's made for some contentious interactions with some people. Some of the people I mentioned before, you know, it's like you. You know, you guys are fair. We're all fair because we have to be. You know, you got to talk to Republicans in the General Assembly and Democrats, and you got to have people who confide in you on both sides. And I felt that way too, and I did. You know, I told you I used to, you know, hang out in Bill Brawley's office when he was a House leader, and you know, just talk, and he would tell me what's happening, and it was a good relationship with people like that. And you know, I think, as you know, Raleigh is all about personal relationships. In fact, politics is kind of about that.
Jim Morrill on Twitter at JimMorrill. The longtime Charlotte Observer political journalist will retire at the end of the year. It's an episode of goodbyes, unfortunately. My father-in-law died on Sunday night. Bill, Dr. William Jarvis Busby. My son called him Obo, Old Bill. No, it was not COVID. His heart failed. There are a lot of things I could tell you about my father-in-law, who I knew for just about 10 years. He was a Moorhead. For those of you who don't know, a Moorhead is a prestigious scholarship to UNC. It's the oldest merit scholarship in the country. Bill was actually a rare double Moorhead, the recipient of scholarships for undergrad and medical school. They don't even have double Moorheads anymore. Bill was a track and field fanatic. He went to several world championships, the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, and he competed in masters track, competitions for those 35 and older. He did the decathlon, and if you can believe it, Bill pole vaulted until he was 59. A couple of times he hosted the National Masters Decathlon meet in Thomasville, North Carolina. That's where he was an orthopedic surgeon. But I didn't really know the surgeon or the decathlete. I got to know the avid reader, the conscientious citizen, sweet, adoring grandfather, the man who really just didn't put up with any BS, who would prefer I not say simply BS. I can hear him saying, "That's bull." He was funny. He brought a slice of curmudgeon to whatever the occasion was as well. I've gotten to know my father-in-law pretty darn well in the last 10 years. In some ways, he became a father figure that, honestly, I wasn't looking for. My dad is still around, and we get along pretty well. Bill became a friend, even though I wasn't looking for a friend, and even though there are 40 years between us. And he also became, quite possibly, my most important source in understanding North Carolina. You see, his family came here before North Carolina was even a state. The Jarvises were farmers in the Tidewater region, northeast corner of the state, arriving more than 350 years ago. That history has always amazed me. And for a Yankee carpetbagger like myself, just trying to understand and appreciate and love North Carolina, nobody helped me do it better than Bill. So in some ways, I thought it was important for me to mention a little bit about him to you, because he has had and will continue to have an outsized impact on my reporting, understanding, and appreciation for so many things North Carolina. The other reason I want to mention my father-in-law is to give you, if only a gentle nudge, go capture some of the stories in your family. About a year ago, I turned to Bill and I said, "Hey, I gotta get you in the studio. I really want to record some of these stories. The story about you watching the 1957 UNC Final Four on a small black and white TV in a tent while away at a Boy Scout weekend. And a memory or two about growing up in the segregated South. Bill obliged. And then COVID hit. We didn't get into the radio station. And on election day, when I got that terrible phone call from my wife that her dad, Bill, was in failing health, I got upset. I got upset because the end was near. I knew it. And on a selfish note, I hadn't recorded any of these stories. I am glad to tell you that I was able to go over and sit with Bill at his house in Cary with my wife, Blair, and her oldest sister, Amy, for about an hour and a half a couple of weeks ago. I hit record and captured some of those stories. I want to encourage you to do the same. You might be a parent or grandparent. You might have parents or grandparents, a coach, a mentor, a mentee, someone whose stories you can just hear ringing in your head. You can have them tell you these stories over and over until you can't. You don't have to physically be together to capture a story. They can hit record on their phone using one of the many phone recording apps. Just try to record these stories while you still can. I got a decade with my father-in-law. My dad never even met his father-in-law. So I take some comfort and joy in remembering our trips to the Dean Dome, our kayaks down the Haw and Neuse Rivers, and our many, many conversations about politics, history, track and field, and family. Honestly, I'm most sad for my son, who will not get to fully know and appreciate his grandfather, Obo. There are memories and tokens that will linger. Bill wanted to build a long jump pit for our son earlier this year. We settled on a sandbox. It's in the backyard. And someday when my son can actually jump, indeed, it will be a long jump pit. And when my son is old enough and asks why his middle name is Jarvis, I'll tell him that that was his grandfather's middle name as well. And then I'll tell him one of those stories. And then there is the truck. Indulge me for just a final moment. It's a 1995 Toyota Tacoma T100. It's the dullest red you can picture. People see this thing flying down 540, and I promise you, they change lanes in a hurry. Bill bought the truck new when he was coaching track at Mount Tabor High School in Winston-Salem. As an aside, he was inducted into the Mount Tabor Hall of Fame a year ago October. Bill was one of the coaches of 9 state championship track and field teams. The truck was used to haul large mats for pole vaulting and sand, yes, to build long jump pits. Amazingly, despite being 25 years old, the truck only has 54,000 miles on it. The truck is in our driveway now. So long as I keep changing the oil, it might be around long enough for my son to drive. And I know it's just a truck. But, you know, sometimes these things are much more. Dr. William Jarvis Busby. Bill. Obo. I will miss him greatly. That you feel like grass in the springtime. You are familiar and warm, like the smell of smoke in the fall. So come back to me now. Come back to me now. Come back to me now. I can hear the sound of
10,000 voices crying through the ages. My grandfather was there in the swirl. So come back to me now. Come back to me now. Come back to me now. I first told you I loved you by the old poplar tree, oh Carolina. Come back to me, please. I did not mean to leave you, but the West called to me, oh Carolina. We gathered in a field in Chatham County. We held hands in the rain, and you promised that you always told you I loved you by the old poplar tree, oh Carolina. Come back to me, please. I did not mean to leave you, but the West called to me.